Silverware clinking against fine china usually meant order, a predictable, stifling morning. But today the sound shattered the silence of the vast dining room as a strange woman pulled out the chair opposite the Duchess. She smelled of cheap lavender and rain, her swollen belly pressing awkwardly against the mahogany table. Her husband didn't apologize. He merely buttered his toast, eyes fixed on his plate. This wasn't a scandal waiting to explode in a screaming match. It was the precise moment a duchess decided she no longer existed. Rain lashed against the tall, arched windows of the dining hall, distorting the manicured lawns into a blurry wash of gray and dead green. Nora chewed a piece of toast. It was cold, the butter congealed into a waxy paste on the surface. Everything in this house felt cold lately. The air itself seemed to carry a damp, heavy weight, smelling faintly of wood smoke and the sharp, metallic tang of unpolished silver. She took a sip of her tea. Bitter. It had been steeping too long. The heavy oak doors at the far end of the room creaked open, the iron hinges letting out a low, protesting groan. Nora didn't look up immediately. She expected Thomas to walk in, reeking of stale brandy and his favorite hounds, late as usual, offering no excuse for his absence the night before. But the footsteps were wrong. There was the heavy, confident thud of Thomas's riding boots, yes, but trailing just behind it was a softer, irregular scuff. A hesitation on the hardwood floor. Nora finally raised her eyes from the rim of her teacup. Thomas strode into the room, his jaw set in a rigid line, his shoulders squared as if preparing for a physical blow. He wasn't looking at Nora. His gaze was fixed stubbornly on the heavy silver candelabra in the center of the table. Behind him stood a woman. She was young, perhaps no more than 20, wrapped in a faded plum muslin dress that hung awkwardly on her frame. The hem of the dress was dark with rainwater, leaving faint, muddy smudges on the polished floorboards. But it wasn't the wet dress or the cheap, overwhelming scent of synthetic lavender soap that commanded the room's oxygen. It was her stomach, round, tight, and unmistakable beneath the thin fabric. 6, maybe 7 months along. Nora's hands did not shake. She didn't drop her teacup. She simply sat there, feeling a bizarre, detached hyper-awareness wash over her. She noticed the way a single drop of rainwater clung to the tip of Thomas's nose. She heard the wet, ragged sound of the young woman's breathing, quick and panicked, like a trapped bird. Thomas pulled out the chair directly across from Nora, the chair that belonged to his mother, the late dowager.
"Sit," he commanded the girl.
His voice was low, carrying a defensive edge that grated against the quiet of the room. The girl, Lydia, Nora would later guess from the crude L embroidered on her frayed shawl, lowered herself into the chair with agonizing slowness. She kept her chin tucked to her chest, her pale hands clutching a damp handkerchief until her knuckles turned a mottled white. Thomas finally looked at Nora. There was no guilt in his eyes, only exhaustion and a cruel, arrogant pragmatism. "The city is festering with cholera," Thomas said, his voice flat. He reached for the silver tongs and dropped a piece of cured ham onto his plate. "The physician said she requires clean air. The estate is sprawling, Nora. You have the east wing. She will remain in the west. You need not even see her." Nora stared at the piece of ham on his plate. The fat was glistening, slightly yellowed. A sudden violent wave of nausea turned her stomach, but she forced herself to swallow it down. The acidic burn of bile coated the back of her throat. She looked at the girl, the mistress. The pregnant mistress sitting at her breakfast table, staring at the fine bone china as if it might bite her. The girl wasn't gloating. She looked terrified, utterly out of her depth, smelling of fear and wet wool. "You need not even see her." The audacity of it didn't ignite a fiery rage in Nora's chest. Instead, it brought a strange, icy clarity. For 3 years, Nora had played the dutiful duchess. She had turned a blind eye to the late nights, the unexplained expenses, the scent of foreign perfumes on his collars. She had endured the pitying whispers of the staff and the thinly veiled sneers of the local gentry. She had let herself be hollowed out, hollowed down to nothing but a title and a corset. And for what? For this? To share her breakfast table with the living, breathing evidence of her own obsolescence. Thomas chewed his food. The sound was wet and rhythmic. I expect you to be reasonable about this, Nora. There is no need for hysterics. It is simply a matter of logistics until the child is born. Logistics. Nora carefully folded her linen napkin. The fabric felt rough, real, grounding against her fingertips. She placed it squarely beside her half-eaten toast. She didn't throw her tea in his face. She didn't scream obscenities or demand the girl be thrown out into the rain. Doing so would imply she still cared. It would imply there was something left to fight for. Instead, Nora stood up. The legs of her chair scraped harshly against the floor, a sharp, ugly sound that made the pregnant girl flinch. Nora, Thomas warned, looking up. His fork paused halfway to his mouth. Sit down. We are not finished discussing this. We are, Nora said. Her voice didn't tremble. It was quiet, devoid of any inflection, like ash settling on snow. She didn't look at him again. She turned her back on the sprawling mahogany table, on the congealing butter, on the cheap lavender scent, and walked out of the dining room. Her footsteps were light, entirely unhurried, echoing softly in the cavernous hallway, as the heavy oak doors swung shut behind her with a dull, final thud. Wood groaning beneath her boots was the only sound as Nora ascended the grand, sweeping staircase. It wasn't the breathless, panicked running of a wounded woman fleeing a scene of devastation. It was a steady, measured climb. Her pulse thumped a slow, heavy rhythm at the base of her throat. She reached her chambers at the end of the east wing. The room was oppressive. Heavy velvet drapes and deep crimson suffocated the morning light, and the scent of beeswax polish and dried roses hung thickly in the air, cloying and dead. Nora stood in the center of the Persian rug and simply breathed for a moment. Her stomach roiled again, a physical rejection of the last hour, but she squeezed her eyes shut and forced the nausea down. There was no time for weakness. The cold, metallic detachment that had shielded her downstairs was beginning to crack, threatening to let in the crushing weight of humiliation. She couldn't let it. Not yet. She moved to the large mahogany wardrobe. She didn't touch the silk gowns, the heavily embroidered bodices, or the imported lace. She walked past them to a sturdy cedar chest at the foot of her bed. Kneeling on the hard floor, she threw open the lid. The sharp smell of cedarwood hit her, grounding her senses. She dug past old winter blankets until her fingers found rough, practical fabric. She pulled out a charcoal wool skirt, a garment she hadn't worn since her days before the marriage, when she was just a country gentleman's daughter, and a thick, unadorned cotton blouse. Her fingers moved to the laces of her corset. It was a vicious, rigid thing made of whalebone and silk, designed to mold her into the perfect, unbreathing ornament Thomas required. She ripped at the knots, her nails scraping against the stiff fabric until the laces gave way. As she pulled the contraption off and let it drop to the floor, she drew in a ragged, shuddering breath. Her ribs expanded painfully, filling with air she felt she hadn't tasted in 3 years. She dressed quickly in the plain wool. It felt heavy, itchy, and wonderfully real. Next, she found an old, scuffed leather valise under her bed. She opened it, the hinges stiff from disuse. What did a woman need when she was ceasing to exist? She packed 3 pairs of thick woolen stockings, an extra blouse, and a heavy knitted shawl. She moved to her vanity. Her jewelry box sat there, a sprawling velvet-lined casket of diamonds, rubies, and pearls. The heavy gold and emerald necklace Thomas had given her after her second miscarriage stared up at her, glittering under the dim light. A shiny apology for a hollow womb. Nora didn't touch the jewels. Instead, she opened a small false-bottom drawer in her writing desk. Inside lay a leather pouch filled with silver coins and a few stray gold pieces she had quietly hoarded from the household accounts over the years, a survival fund she hadn't realized she was building until this exact moment. She shoved the heavy pouch into the valise. She slipped her gold wedding band off her finger. It slid off easily, too easily. The metal felt cold as she set it down on the vanity table, right next to a half-burnt beeswax candle. A quiet resignation. "Your Grace?" Nora flinched, spinning around. Bridget, her personal maid, stood in the doorway, a stack of freshly pressed linens in her arms. The young girl's eyes darted from the corset abandoned on the rug to the open valise on the bed, and finally to the plain, rough wool Nora was wearing. Bridget's mouth fell open, a silent gasp escaping her lips. Nora stepped forward, closing the distance between them. She reached out, her hand resting firmly over Bridget's. The maid's skin was warm, trembling slightly. "Don't speak, Bridget," Nora whispered, her voice tight, urgent. "If you speak, if you ask a question, you become an accomplice. You know nothing. You saw nothing." Bridget swallowed hard, her eyes wide with a mixture of terror and sudden, acute understanding. She looked at the abandoned wedding ring on the vanity. Tears welled in the young maid's eyes, but she pressed her lips into a thin, white line and nodded once, quickly. Nora picked up the valise. The leather handle dug into her palm. It was heavy, but it was a weight she chose. She bypassed the main halls entirely, slipping through the narrow, unlit servants' corridors. The air here was different. It smelled of damp stone, old grease, and boiling onions from the kitchens below. It was the smell of the unseen machinery that kept the grand estate running, a world Nora was technically master of, but had never truly belonged to. She reached the back courtyard. The rain was falling steadily now, a freezing, relentless drizzle that immediately plastered stray strands of hair to her cheeks. The stables were dim, smelling powerfully of wet earth, horse sweat, and sweet hay. The stable boy was asleep on a pile of feed sacks, a rough wool blanket pulled over his head. Nora didn't wake him. She moved quietly to the stall of her own mare, a steady, uncomplaining bay named Miller. Her hands worked quickly, efficiently, buckling the cold leather straps of the saddle. Her fingers were numb, stiff with the damp chill, but the sheer, blinding adrenaline coursing through her veins kept her moving. She led the horse out into the misty rain, the sound of hooves muffled by the thick, churning mud of the stable yard. Nora mounted the horse, settling the valise in front of her. She looked back at the sprawling stone manor just once. Its dozens of windows stared blindly out into the fog, massive and indifferent. Thomas was probably still eating his ham. The girl was probably still trembling. Nora turned the horse toward the tree line. The cold rain soaked through her wool shawl, chilling her to the bone. But as the iron gates of the estate faded into the mist behind her, a strange, jagged feeling tore through her chest. It wasn't happiness. It was too raw, too terrifying for that. It was freedom. Water pooled in the sagging leather of the saddle. Every time Miller shifted his weight, a freezing trickle seeped through Nora's heavy wool skirt, plastering it against her cold thighs. She had been riding for what felt like days, though the iron gray sky, choked with low-hanging storm clouds, offered no clue to the actual hour. It was simply a continuous, suffocating dimness. Her hands, clutching the reins, were raw. The skin across her knuckles had pulled tight, a harsh, mottled purple, stinging with every gust of wind. She had forgotten gloves. In her silent, measured escape from the manor, she had remembered thick stockings and stolen silver, but she had forgotten gloves. It was a stupid, glaring oversight, and it made her want to weep. She didn't, of course. Weeping required energy she couldn't spare. The manicured gravel roads of the estate had given way to deeply rutted dirt tracks miles ago. Now she was navigating the edge of the open moor. There were no trees here to break the gale, only endless, undulating stretches of dying heather and thick, sucking black mud. The wind howled across the flat expanse, a low, continuous wail that vibrated in her teeth. It smelled of brine and rotting peat, a harsh, ancient scent that made the rosewater perfumes of her former life feel entirely imaginary. Miller stumbled. His front hoof plunged deep into a hidden rut, water splashing violently up his foreleg. He let out a sharp, panicked snort, throwing his head back. Nora jolted forward, her stomach slamming against the hard pommel of the saddle. The wind was instantly knocked from her lungs in a sharp, painful gasp. She grabbed a fistful of the horse's coarse black mane, her frozen fingers tangling in the wet hair, fighting to keep her balance as the animal scrambled to right himself. "Easy," she gasped, her voice sounding thin and pathetic over the rushing wind. "Easy, boy. Steady." He found his footing, but his gait became stiff, exhausted. He was a carriage horse, bred for trotting along flat avenues, not for trudging through freezing moorland sludge. They had to stop. Squinting through the relentless drizzle, Nora scanned the bleak horizon. A few hundred yards off the road, barely distinguishable from the rocky crags, sat a low structure, a ruined shepherd's hut. The thatch roof had partially caved in, rotting into a mess of black straw, but the stone walls were thick and standing. She steered Miller toward it, every movement of her body screaming in protest. The inside of her thighs chafed agonizingly against the damp wool, a burning friction that made her grit her teeth until her jaw ached. Reaching the hut, Nora practically fell from the saddle. Her boots hit the muddy ground, and her legs, numb and trembling from hours of straddling the horse, buckled instantly. She hit the wet earth hard on her knees. The impact sent a jarring shock up her spine, and the cold mud soaked immediately through her skirt. She knelt there for a long moment in the dirt. The rain beat down on her back. A profound, hollow realization settled over her. She was cold. She was filthy. She was completely alone. Back at the manor, the hearths would be roaring. Cook would be pulling hot, crusty loaves of bread from the ovens. The air would smell of roasting meats and sweet butter. A sharp, ugly pang of regret twisted in her gut. It wasn't a longing for Thomas. She felt absolutely nothing for the man but a cold, heavy disgust. But the comfort, the relentless, insulating safety of wealth. She missed the warmth so desperately it felt like a physical wound. She forced herself to stand, groaning softly as her knees popped. She hated the regret. She hated the weakness of her own flesh. Grabbing Miller's reins, she led him through the dark, empty doorway of the hut. It smelled overwhelmingly of old sheep dung, wet dust, and decay. The wind was blocked, at least, replaced by the heavy, damp silence of the stone walls. In the far corner, a patch of dry dirt remained untouched by the leaking roof. Nora tied the horse to a rusted iron ring protruding from the wall. Her fingers were so clumsy she had to try three times to fashion a simple knot. She didn't unsaddle him. She lacked the upper body strength to lift the heavy leather without the stable boy's help, and she feared if she took it off, she wouldn't be able to put it back on. Instead, she moved to the dry corner and collapsed against the rough stone wall. She pulled her knees to her chest, wrapping her arms tightly around her shins to conserve whatever pathetic scraps of body heat she had left. Her stomach gave a loud, empty rumble. The piece of cold toast she had abandoned on the breakfast table floated through her mind, a mocking image. She closed her eyes. The cold was a physical weight, pressing against her chest, slowing her breathing. She needed a fire. She needed dry clothes. She had money, heavy silver coins pressing against her hip in the leather pouch. But out here on the desolate moor, a fortune in silver couldn't buy a single dry match. She listened to Miller chewing on a patch of dead grass near the doorway. The rhythmic grinding sound was the only proof she hadn't simply died and faded into the damp gray walls. Nora pressed her forehead against her wet knees and waited for the dawn, shivering violently into the dark. Coal smoke, thick with the scent of boiling cabbage and stale fat, rolled out of the chimney ahead, hanging heavy in the damp evening air. It was the most beautiful thing Nora had ever seen. The hamlet was nothing more than a muddy crossroads, a blacksmith's forge, a few slumped wattle and daub cottages, and a sprawling low-roofed tavern that looked as though it were slowly sinking into the earth. A faded wooden sign hung above the door, groaning on rusted hinges, the painted letters completely obscured by years of grime. Nora rode Miller to the wooden hitching post outside. The horse didn't even protest as she yanked on the reins. He simply stopped, his head hanging low, sides heaving. Nora sat in the saddle for a long moment, staring at the heavy wooden door of the tavern. Her whole body felt bruised, beaten by the elements. The wet wool of her clothes had dried slightly, stiffening into a heavy, abrasive armor that chafed against her raw skin with every breath. She took a deep breath, trying to steady the tremor in her hands. She was no longer a duchess demanding service. She was a lone woman on the road, a target. She swung her leg over the saddle, stifling a gasp as the stiff muscles in her back seized. Dropping to the muddy ground, she grabbed her leather valise. It felt twice as heavy as it had this morning. Pushing open the heavy oak door, a wall of heat and noise hit her. The air inside the tavern was thick, almost chewable, heavy with the sharp reek of spilled ale, unwashed bodies, and roasting pork. The common room was crowded with rough men, drovers, farmers, laborers with dirt ground deep into the creases of their necks. The low murmur of conversation and the clatter of wooden tankards paused for a fraction of a second as she walked in, a dozen pairs of eyes briefly sliding over her wet, ragged form before returning to their drinks. Nora kept her chin down. She focused her eyes on the scarred wooden bar at the far end of the room and walked toward it, her boots leaving muddy prints on the rush-covered floor. The innkeeper was a massive man with a thick, graying beard and a filthy apron pulled tight over a bulging stomach. He was violently scrubbing a pewter mug with a rag that looked dirtier than the floor. He didn't look up as Nora approached. "I need a room," Nora said. Her voice cracked. It sounded brittle and weak, entirely lacking the resonant authority she had cultivated for years. She cleared her throat, a sharp, metallic taste of exhaustion flooding her mouth, and tried again. "A room. For the night. And stabling for my horse." The innkeeper finally stopped scrubbing. He leaned his heavy forearms on the sticky wood of the bar and stared at her. His eyes were small, dark, and ruthlessly observant. They took in her soaking wet plain wool dress, the shivering of her shoulders, and then, crucially, they dropped to her hands resting on the bar. Her hands were red and chapped from the cold, but they were smooth. The fingernails were perfectly shaped, devoid of the deep-set dirt and calluses that marked a working woman. "Room's 2 shillings," he said, his voice a low, gravelly rumble. "Stabling is another, in advance." It was an exorbitant price, an extortionate lie designed to test her. A farm girl would have balked, argued, or turned away. Nora simply reached into her wet pocket, her stiff, numb fingers fumbling with the leather strings of her pouch. She pulled out 3 silver shillings. They caught the dim, flickering light of the hearth fires as she slid them across the sticky wood. The innkeeper's eyes narrowed. He didn't snatch the coins. He placed a thick, scarred finger on them and slowly dragged them toward his side of the bar. "Water," Nora added, forcing her voice to remain flat. "Hot water for washing, and whatever food you have." He picked up the coins, testing the weight of one in his palm. "Pork stew and a heel of bread. I'll send a boy up with the water. Room is top of the stairs, last door on the left." He didn't offer a key. There were no locks here. Nora picked up her valise and turned toward the narrow, rickety staircase in the corner of the room. Every step was an agony. The wood groaned under her weight, threatening to splinter. The room was hardly larger than a closet. A narrow cot shoved against the far wall boasted a mattress stuffed with straw that rustled loudly when she set her bag down. The only light came from a single tallow candle stub sitting in a pool of its own congealed grease on a small wooden stool. The air was frigid, drafts whistling through the cracks in the shuttered window. Nora didn't care. She sat heavily on the edge of the cot. The straw mattress offered absolutely no give, feeling like a sack of rocks beneath her aching bones. A few minutes later, a scrawny boy pushed the door open without knocking, carrying a steaming wooden bucket and a chipped clay bowl holding a dark, greasy stew. He set them on the floor and bolted without a word. Nora stared at the bucket of hot water. Steam rose from it,
curling into the freezing air. Slowly, painfully, she reached down to unlace her boots. The leather was soaked through and swollen. It took her 10 agonizing minutes of pulling and tugging, tears of sheer frustration prickling her eyes, before the left boot popped off. A massive blister on her heel had burst, rubbing the skin raw and bloody against the coarse wool of her stocking. The right foot was no better. She stripped off the heavy, sodden skirt and the damp blouse, leaving them in a miserable heap on the floorboards. Shivering violently in her thin chemise, she dipped a rough cloth into the hot water and dragged it over her face, her neck, her arms. The heat was a shock to her system, a brief, blinding flash of comfort that made her muscles twitch and spasm. Wrapping herself in the dry, heavy shawl from her valise, she picked up the bowl of stew. It smelled strongly of salt and slightly off meat. The bread was hard as a stone. Nora took a bite. The bread scraped the roof of her mouth, and the stew tasted of old fat and burnt onions. She chewed methodically, forcing herself to swallow. It wasn't the delicate, flaky pastries of the Duchess's breakfast table. It was survival. It tasted like dirt and grit and freedom. And as she scraped the bottom of the clay bowl, huddled on a bed of straw in a freezing room, she realized she was starving for more of it. Morning arrived not with a gentle wash of sunlight, but with a creeping, abrasive gray chill that seeped through the cracks in the wooden shutters. Nora opened her eyes. Dust motes hung suspended in the drafty air, thick and lifeless. Her body felt like a single solid block of aching lead. When she attempted to push herself up from the straw mattress, a sharp, white-hot pain shot up her lower back, and her left calf cramped so violently she had to bite the inside of her cheek to swallow a gasp. She tasted the faint copper tang of blood in her mouth. Slowly, agonizingly, she swung her legs over the edge of the cot. The floorboards were freezing. She looked at her boots. They were still damp, sitting in a sad, slumped pile by the wash bucket. The blister on her left heel was an angry, weeping red circle. If she put the heavy leather boot back on, she would be limping within an hour. If she tried to ride Miller, her chafed thighs would bleed. It was a cold, brutal calculus. She was a woman alone, carrying a pouch of silver heavy enough to get her killed, and she was already physically breaking down on the second day. Nora moved to the wash bucket. A thin crust of ice had formed over the water overnight. She plunged her hands in anyway, welcoming the biting shock. She scrubbed her face, scrubbing away the lingering phantom scent of the lavender soap from yesterday morning. It felt like a lifetime ago. She dressed in the stiff, scratchy wool. She didn't bother pinning her hair up in the complex coiled braids her maid Bridget used to arrange. Instead, she pulled her hair back into a severe, tight knot at the base of her neck, ignoring the damp strands that escaped. She needed to look invisible. A solitary woman on the road was a curiosity. A bedraggled widow was a ghost. Grabbing her valise, she limped heavily down the narrow stairs. The common room was mostly empty, smelling powerfully of stale beer, cold ash, and unwashed wool. The massive innkeeper was wiping down a table near the hearth, his heavy brow furrowed in a permanent scowl. He watched Nora descend, his small dark eyes tracking her awkward, halting steps. "Stabling's paid till noon," he grunted, throwing the filthy rag over his shoulder. "You want breakfast? It's another copper. Yesterday's oats."
"No," Nora said, her voice raspy from the cold air. She tightened her grip on her bag. "Is there a merchant caravan passing through today? Or a wagon heading toward the coast?"
The innkeeper let out a short, guttural laugh, exposing yellowed, crooked teeth.
"Coast is a week's ride, girl. Roads are pure muck. Nobody's hauling freight till the rain stops. You got a horse in my stable. Ride it."
"I prefer a wagon," she said simply. She didn't owe him an explanation. He leaned against the heavy wooden table, his gaze dropping to the leather pouch bulging slightly beneath the folds of her skirt. The silence in the room stretched, thick and dangerous. Nora's heart hammered against her ribs, a frantic, trapped rhythm, but she kept her face entirely blank. She stared back at him, forcing her eyes to remain dead and uninterested.
"Garrett's loading up out back,"
the innkeeper finally muttered, scratching his bearded chin.
Hauling wool and salted cod to Highbridge. He might take a passenger if you got the coin, but he don't take kindly to delicate stomachs.
Nora nodded once, a sharp, jerky motion, and walked out the heavy oak door. The air outside was raw, biting through her shawl instantly. The mud in the tavern yard had frozen into deep, treacherous ruts. Behind the tavern, a long, flatbed wagon sat hitched to two massive, shaggy draft horses. A man was throwing heavy burlap sacks into the back, his breath pluming in the freezing air. He was tall, entirely lacking the refined posture of the men Nora was used to. He wore a patched leather coat, and his hands were thick, calloused, and stained dark with grease.
"Garrett!" Nora called out.
The man paused, a heavy sack resting easily on his broad shoulder. He turned. His face was weathered, deeply lined around the eyes, with a jagged white scar cutting through his left eyebrow. He looked at Nora, his expression completely devoid of curiosity. He just looked tired.
"Innkeeper said you might be heading toward Highbridge," Nora said, forcing her voice to carry over the wind.
"I need passage." Garrett tossed the sack onto the pile. The wagon groaned.
"I ain't a carriage service. I haul freight. You want to sit on salted cod for 3 days? It's your misery."
"I can pay," Nora said. Garrett wiped his dirty hands on his trousers. He walked slowly toward her, his boots crunching loudly on the frozen mud. He stopped a few feet away, looking her up and down. He didn't look at her with the predatory gleam the innkeeper had. He looked at her like a bad investment.
"You're running from something," Garrett stated. It wasn't a question. "A husband, a debt, or the law? I don't care which. But trouble follows runners. I charge double for trouble. 5 shillings, up front." 5 shillings was extortion. It was a month's wage for a skilled laborer.
Nora didn't blink. She pulled the heavy leather pouch from her skirt. Her stiff, numb fingers struggled with the knot, but she finally forced it open. She counted out 5 silver coins. They clinked together, a bright, wealthy sound that felt obscenely loud in the muddy yard. She held them out. Garrett looked at the silver in her soft, pale hand. He looked up at her face. He didn't take the money immediately.
"I have a horse in the stable," Nora added, her voice dropping lower.
"A bay mare, carriage bred, worth 50 pounds at least. She is yours. Sell her, keep her, I don't care. Just get me to Highbridge."
Garrett's eyebrows shot up. A carriage horse was a windfall he hadn't expected. He reached out and snatched the silver from her palm. His fingers were rough as tree bark.
"Get in the back," he grunted, turning toward the wagon. "Find a spot between the wool and keep your head down. We leave in 10 minutes.
Nora walked to the back of the wagon. The tailgate was high. She grabbed the rough wooden edge, her blister screaming in protest as she hoisted herself up, hauling her valise over the side. She crawled into the narrow space between the heavy burlap sacks, the overwhelming smell of fish and wet sheep hitting her instantly. She pulled her knees to her chest, hiding herself in the shadows of the cargo. She had just traded a small fortune and a prized mare for a bed of rotting fish. Yet as the wagon lurched forward, she felt the first true, steadying breath fill her lungs in years. Wood ground relentlessly against iron. Every frozen rut in the road sent a violent, bone-rattling jolt up through the coarse burlap sacks of raw wool Nora was sitting on. The wagon possessed no springs, no velvet-lined benches, no glass windows to block the punishing elements. It was merely a brutal, rolling platform of commerce. Her teeth clicked together painfully with every jolt, and within the first hour, a dull, throbbing headache had firmly planted itself behind her eyes. She huddled deeper into her woolen shawl, pulling it over her nose to block out the eye-watering stench of the salted cod stacked just inches from her boots. Garrett sat on the driver's bench up front, a hunched, silent silhouette against the gray sky. He didn't speak to her. He only clicked his tongue at the massive draft horses, communicating in a series of low grunts and the occasional snap of the reins. As the miles crawled by,
The frozen mud began to thaw under a pale, watery mid-morning sun, turning the road into a thick, sucking soup. The wagon's pace slowed to an agonizing crawl.
Nora watched the desolate, empty fields roll past through the gaps in the cargo. Her mind, usually so disciplined and confined to household ledgers and seating arrangements, began to drift back to the dining room. She thought of Thomas's plate, the yellowed fat on the ham. She thought of Lydia, the pregnant girl, sitting in the dowager's chair.
She expected to feel a surge of possessive rage, a territorial fury over another woman sleeping in her husband's bed, carrying his heir. But the rage never materialized. Instead, Nora felt a bizarre clinical pity. Lydia wasn't a conqueror. She was just the newest inmate. Thomas would put her in a fine room, buy her expensive silks, and wait for the child. If it was a boy, Lydia would be discarded to a country cottage with a meager allowance. If it was a girl, Thomas would simply find another Lydia.
Nora stared at her own hands, resting on the rough burlap. The skin was pale, the fingernails clean and perfectly shaped. Duchess's hands, decorative, useless. The wagon suddenly lurched, tilting violently to the left. Nora was thrown hard against a crate of cod, her shoulder absorbing the heavy impact. She gasped, grabbing blindly at the wool sacks to steady herself. The massive draft horses let out panicked, straining whinnies, their hooves slipping loudly in the wet earth. The wagon completely stopped, settling deeper into the left side with a sickening heavy groan of wood.
"Damn it to hell!" Garrett barked.
Nora peered over the tailgate. The left rear wheel had sunk up to its axle in a massive hidden sinkhole of mud. The wooden spokes were entirely swallowed by the thick brown sludge.
Garrett jumped down from the driver's bench, his heavy boots sinking inches into the muck. He waded to the back, cursing continuously under his breath. He grabbed the wooden spokes of the sunken wheel and pulled. The veins in his neck popped, his face turning a dark, mottled red with effort. The wheel didn't budge an inch. The mud held it with a stubborn, vacuum-like grip. He kicked the side of the wagon, leaving a smear of dirt on the wood. "Cargo's too heavy. We're stuck fast." He looked up at Nora, peering out from between the sacks. "Get out." Nora didn't argue. She grabbed her valise and scrambled over the tailgate, dropping into the mud. The cold, wet sludge instantly soaked through her leather boots, seeping into her woolen stockings. She shuddered, holding her valise against her chest. "Sit on the bank," Garrett ordered, pointing to a patch of dead grass a few yards away. "Don't move." He waded to the front of the wagon, grabbing the horses' bridles, trying to coax them forward. The massive animals strained, their harness leather creaking loudly, their hooves churning the mud into a frothing mess, but the wagon remained anchored. Garrett cursed again, wiping a streak of muddy sweat from his forehead. He walked back to the stuck wheel, wedging his shoulder beneath the wagon's frame. "When I yell, you crack the whip over their heads," Garrett told her, nodding toward the bench. Nora looked at the driver's bench, then at the man struggling in the mud. She dropped her valise onto the wet grass. She didn't climb up to the bench. Instead, she walked directly into the deepest part of the muddy rut, right beside Garrett. The sludge sucked at her boots, pulling heavily at her ankles. Garrett stopped pushing, turning his head to glare at her. "What are you doing? I told you to sit on the bank. You'll ruin your clothes."
"My clothes are already ruined," Nora said flatly. She wedged her shoulder under the heavy wooden lip of the wagon bed, right next to his.
The wood was damp and splintered, pressing agonizingly into her collarbone. The smell of wet horsehair and Garrett's sour sweat was overwhelming. Garrett stared at her for a long second, his jaw tight. He didn't argue. "On three," he growled, turning back to the wheel. "One, two, three, push!"
Nora pushed. She drove her ruined, blistered feet into the slick mud, seeking purchase, and threw every ounce of her body weight upward against the heavy wood. The pain in her lower back flared, a sharp, blinding agony that made her vision swim. Her hands, pale and perfectly manicured, dug into the filthy, grease-stained wood of the undercarriage. A splinter drove itself deep into her palm. She ignored it. She pushed until she felt a blood vessel throb dangerously in her temple,
until her lungs burned for air. Beside her, Garrett roared with effort, his boot sliding back an inch before catching on a submerged rock. The wagon groaned loudly. The mud let out a wet, sucking sound, like a giant lung taking a breath. The heavy iron-rimmed wheel slowly, agonizingly, lifted an inch, then two. "Keep going!" Garrett shouted, his voice cracking.
The draft horses, feeling the sudden give, surged forward. Nora stumbled, falling hard to her knees directly into the freezing muck as the wagon violently lurched out of the hole, the heavy wooden wheel rolling safely onto solid ground. She stayed on her knees for a moment, her chest heaving, rain mixing with the cold sweat on her face. Her skirt was entirely black with heavy sludge. She raised her hands. Her nails were packed with thick, dark grit. Her knuckles were scraped raw and bleeding sluggishly. The soft, pale skin was smeared with axle grease and filthy brown water. Garrett walked over to her. He was breathing heavily, his chest rising and falling. He looked down at her ruined dress, her bleeding hands, and the mud smeared across her cheek. He didn't offer his hand to help her up. "Out here, you stood up on your own."
"Get back in the wagon," Garrett said. His voice had lost the sharp edge of hostility. It was just tired. "We're losing daylight." Nora pushed herself up, her joints popping loudly in protest. She didn't wipe the mud from her face. As she hauled herself back over the tailgate, smelling of fish and swamp, she looked at her dirty, bleeding hands one more time. They finally looked like they belonged to someone who actually existed.
Night swallowed the road whole, erasing the desolate fields and replacing them with a freezing, oppressive blackness. Garrett finally pulled back on the reins, his low grunt bringing the massive draft horses to a halt near a shallow grove of skeletal birch trees. The wagon groaned as it settled into the frozen earth. Nora didn't move immediately. The mud on her skirt had dried over the last few hours, hardening into a thick, abrasive shell that encased her legs like plaster. When she finally forced herself to stand, the stiff wool cracked loudly, pulling painfully at the fine hairs on her calves. She climbed awkwardly over the tailgate, her ruined boots hitting the hard ground with a dull thud. Her entire body vibrated with a phantom rattling, an echo of the wagon's merciless shaking.
Garrett was already moving, stripping the heavy leather harnesses off the exhausted horses. He didn't ask her to help. He simply pointed a grease-stained finger toward a pile of deadwood near the tree line.
Nora understood the silent command. She dragged her feet toward the birch trees, crouching in the dark to gather fallen branches. The wood was damp, covered in a thin layer of freezing slime, but she piled it into her arms until her biceps burned with the strain. She dropped the pile near the front of the wagon.
Within minutes, Garrett struck a flint against steel. The sharp, metallic clicks punctuated the heavy silence. A tiny orange spark caught a tuft of dry moss, and he blew on it gently, his harsh features illuminated by the sudden, fragile glow.
The fire caught, sending a thick column of white, acrid smoke straight up into the windless air. He unrolled a heavy, oil-stained canvas tarp near the flames and tossed a rock-hard heel of bread onto it, followed by a strip of raw, salted cod.
"Eat," he ordered, sitting heavily on a nearby stump. Nora sank onto the edge of the canvas. The fire offered a desperate, localized heat that barely touched the deep chill in her bones. She picked up the cod. It felt like tree bark covered in coarse salt crystals that bit into the open cuts on her fingers. She took a bite. The salt instantly sucked all the moisture from her mouth, followed by a violent, fishy decay that made her gag. She clamped her hand over her mouth, her eyes watering, forcing her throat to swallow. Garrett watched her struggle, tearing a chunk of bread with his teeth. "Told you. You want a velvet cushion? You go back to wherever you ran from."
"I am perfectly fine," Nora rasped, her voice scratching against the salt in her throat. She took another deliberate bite of the fish, chewing methodically. She lowered her right hand to rest on her knee, wincing as a sharp, localized throb pulsed through her palm. The splinter from the wagon's undercarriage was buried deep beneath the skin at the base of her thumb. The surrounding flesh was already angry, swollen into a tight red mound. Garrett's eyes dropped to her hand. He stopped chewing.
"Let me see it," he said. Nora curled her fingers inward. "It's nothing, just a sliver." "Out here, a sliver festers. You lose the hand by Wednesday. You die of blood rot by Friday," he said, his voice flat, devoid of any bedside manner. He held out his massive, calloused hand. "Give it here." Nora hesitated, then slowly uncurled her fingers, placing her palm against his. His skin was rough, warm, and smelled permanently of leather and horse sweat. He pulled a small, wicked-looking iron knife from his belt. He didn't wipe the blade. He just held it directly into the orange flames of the campfire until the metal hissed and turned a faint, dull red. "Don't pull away," Garrett warned. He didn't wait for her consent. He gripped her wrist with bruising force. The hot tip of the blade pierced the swollen skin of her palm. Nora's breath hitched, a sharp hiss escaping her teeth. The pain was immediate and white-hot, entirely different from the dull ache of her muscles. She felt the iron dig into her flesh, scraping against the buried wood. Her entire arm trembled involuntarily, her instinct screaming at her to jerk away, but she forced herself to remain perfectly still. She locked her jaw, staring fiercely into the center of the fire, refusing to let a single tear breach her eyelashes. Garrett grunted softly, twisting the blade. A small, dark shard of dirty wood popped out, followed by a thick bead of dark red blood. He released her wrist instantly, wiping the blade on his trousers. "Squeeze the blood out. Get the dirt with it." Nora cradled her hand against her chest, her heart hammering a frantic rhythm against her ribs. She pressed her thumb hard against the cut, watching the blood well up and spill over her dirty knuckles. It hurt brilliantly. It felt incredibly real. "Why did you push?" Garrett asked suddenly, throwing a thick branch onto the fire. Sparks shot upward, dying in the dark. Nora looked up. "I needed the wagon to move." "You paid 5 shillings, he pointed out, leaning back. "Most women with hands that soft would have sat on the bank and cried until a man fixed it." "Crying doesn't move mud," Nora said simply. She looked at her palm, wiping the excess blood on her stiff, filthy skirt. "And my hands aren't soft anymore." Garrett stared at her for a long moment, the dancing firelight casting deep, harsh shadows across the jagged scar on his brow. He didn't offer a compliment or a word of comfort. He just nodded once, a slow, calculated acknowledgement. He reached into his coat and tossed her a small, dented tin. "Pine pitch and beeswax," he muttered, laying down on the cold ground and pulling his coat over his head. "Put it on the cut. It burns, but it keeps the rot out." Nora caught the tin. The metal was cold. She opened it, the sharp medicinal sting of pine resin cutting through the smell of the fish. She smeared the thick paste into her bleeding palm. It burned like acid, a vicious, biting heat. Nora closed her eyes, clutching her hand to her chest, and listened to the wind howling across the empty dark. She had never felt so utterly, painfully alive. Salt coated her tongue hours before Highbridge actually appeared. The air grew heavy, losing the crisp bite of the open fields, replaced by a thick, stagnant humidity that smelled of rotting kelp, raw sewage, and burning coal. Nora sat wedged between the wool sacks, her knees pulled to her chest. The wagon rattled over a sudden patch of uneven cobblestones, jarring her spine. She pulled herself up, leaning over the wooden tailgate to look ahead. Highbridge was a chaotic, sprawling mess of slate roofs and leaning timber buildings, clinging desperately to the edge of a gray, churning sea. The harbor was a jagged forest of wooden shipmasts, bobbing violently in the choppy water. The noise was a physical assault. Shouting dock workers, the screech of rusted iron pulleys, the chaotic clatter of horse hooves on wet stone, and the aggressive, sharp cries of gulls fighting over fish guts in the gutters.
It was hideous. It was perfect. Garrett navigated the massive wagon through the narrow, crooked streets, cursing violently at pushcart vendors and wandering dogs that blocked his path. He finally pulled the horses to a halt in a muddy alleyway behind a massive windowless brick warehouse. The stench of salted fish here was suffocating, thick enough to chew. "End of the line," Garrett called back, wrapping the reins around the brake lever. Nora grabbed her leather valise. It was scuffed now, smeared with mud, looking like it belonged exactly where it was. She climbed over the tailgate, her boots hitting the wet, garbage-strewn cobblestones. Her left leg nearly buckled as the ruptured blister on her heel screamed in protest, but she locked her knee, forcing herself to stand straight. Garrett climbed down and began untying the rope securing the cargo. He didn't look at her.
"Thank you," Nora said, her voice barely carrying over the din of the nearby docks. He paused, a thick rope looped in his calloused hand. He turned to face her. His eyes flicked down to her ruined dress, the mud smeared across her cheek, and the clumsy bandage of torn linen wrapped around her hand. "You stick out," Garrett said bluntly. "You look like you've been dragged behind a horse, but you stand like you own the street. In this town, that gets a knife in your ribs."
Nora stiffened slightly, her chin dropping a fraction of an inch. "Take the silver out of the pouch," he continued, turning back to the wool. "Sew it into the hem of your skirt. Only keep coppers in your pocket. Go to Blackwood Lane." He stopped himself, scowling slightly.
"No, go to Cutter's Alley. Find Widow Hughes. She runs a boarding house for sailors and mill workers. It's filthy, but she doesn't ask questions if the rent is paid."
Nora committed the name to memory. Cutter's Alley. Garrett threw the rope over his shoulder. He looked at her one last time, his harsh face entirely unreadable. "Don't trust anyone who smiles at you. Good luck." He didn't wait for a reply. He walked toward the warehouse doors. Nora turned her back on the wagon and walked toward the main thoroughfare. The sensory overload was dizzying. Men bumped into her roughly without apologizing. A woman emptying a chamber pot from a second-story window barely missed Nora's shoulder, the foul liquid splashing onto the cobblestones near her boots. No one bowed. No one cleared a path. She was entirely insignificant. She spent an hour wandering the labyrinth of damp, leaning streets before she found Cutter's Alley. It was a narrow, sunless crack between two towering brick factories, smelling of boiled cabbage and damp rot. Widow Hughes's boarding house was marked only by a faded wooden sign hanging crookedly over a peeling door. Nora pushed it open.
The front room was dim and suffocatingly hot, heated by an iron stove in the corner. A heavy woman with a face like crumpled parchment and a stained apron sat behind a scarred wooden desk, aggressively scrubbing a brass candlestick.
"No vacancy for whores," the woman snapped without looking up, her voice like grinding stones. Nora didn't flinch. She walked to the desk, ignoring the sharp pain in her heel, and set her heavy valise on the floor.
"I need a room," Nora said, keeping her voice flat, stripping it of its refined vowels, aiming for the coarse, tired cadence she had heard Garrett use. "A single. I don't entertain." Widow Hughes finally looked up. Her eyes were milky and shrewd, assessing Nora's ruined clothes, her dirty face, and her battered luggage.
"Two coppers a night, paid a week in advance. No fires in the room. You wash at the pump in the yard," she rattled off, holding out a grubby hand.
Before her escape, Nora would have handed over a silver shilling and told the woman to keep the change, desperate to avoid conversation. But Garrett's voice echoed in her head.
"Hide the silver."
Nora dug her hand into her pocket, bypassing the heavy leather pouch entirely. She found the loose copper coins she had received as change at a toll road. She counted out exactly 14 coppers, slapping them onto the scarred wood of the desk one by one. The metal made a dull, cheap sound.
14, Nora said coldly, "and I want a key."
Widow Hughes' eyes narrowed. She didn't argue. She swept the coppers into her apron pocket and tossed a heavy, rusted iron key onto the desk. "Top floor, end of the hall. If you bring bedbugs in, I throw you out the window." Nora took the key. The metal was cold and jagged against her palm. She climbed three flights of stairs that groaned underfoot, the air growing thicker and staler with every step. She reached the end of the hall and unlocked the door. The room was scarcely larger than a coffin. A lumpy cot sat under a tiny, grime-crusted window. A chipped wash basin rested on a wobbly stool. The walls were peeling, revealing dark, damp plaster underneath. Nora walked inside and pushed the door shut. She slid the heavy iron deadbolt home with a loud, satisfying clack. She dropped her valise. She didn't sit on the bed. She walked straight to the filthy window and used her sleeve to wipe away a circle of grime. Beyond the endless rows of gray rooftops, she could just see a sliver of the dark, violent ocean. She was bruised. She was bleeding. She smelled of mud, pine pitch, and salted fish. Her husband's pregnant mistress was likely pouring tea from her silver pots at this very moment. But as Nora stared out at the churning water, touching the heavy iron key in her pocket, a slow, grim smile finally cracked her chapped lips. She was no longer a duchess. She was simply Nora, and for the first time in her life, she owned herself. Cold iron felt heavy in her hand. The shears she had bartered for that morning from a passing rag-and-bone man were dull, coated in a fine layer of rust that smelled faintly of old blood and damp earth. Nora sat on the edge of her lumpy straw mattress. She pulled a long, tangled section of her hair forward. It was heavy, matted with mud from the road and the pervasive coal dust of Highbridge, but the strands underneath still held the soft, useless sheen of an aristocratic life. A woman with soft hands and silken hair in Cutter's Alley was prey. Garrett's warning echoed endlessly in the damp room. She opened the iron shears. They squeaked, a harsh, metallic grind. She positioned the blades close to her jawline and squeezed. The dull metal chewed through the thick hair, catching and pulling violently at her scalp. Tears pricked her eyes from the sharp, tugging pain, but she didn't stop. She sawed through the lock until it gave way with a sickening crunch. A thick, muddy coil of hair dropped onto the floorboards. It looked like a dead animal. Nora didn't hesitate. She grabbed the next section. Squeeze. Tear. Crunch. Her neck felt suddenly, shockingly cold as the damp drafts of the room hit skin that had been shielded for a lifetime. She hacked away until the floor was littered with the ruins of her vanity, leaving her with a jagged, uneven crop that barely brushed the nape of her neck. She ran her sore, bandaged hand over the bristly ends. It was ugly. It was brutal. She felt an overwhelming surge of relief. Next came the silver. She had spent her second copper coin on a heavy needle and a spool of waxed sail twine. Sitting cross-legged on the ticking, she turned her filthy charcoal skirt inside out. Her thumb, still swollen and throbbing beneath the crude bandage of pine pitch and linen, made gripping the small iron needle an absolute agony. She unstitched the heavy bottom hem. Taking the leather pouch from her valise, she began sliding the heavy silver coins into the fabric channel, spacing them out so they wouldn't clink together. Pushing the needle through the thick wool required her to press the dull end against the floorboards, throwing her body weight behind it to force it through. Every stitch was a battle. Blood seeped through her bandage, staining the white sail twine a rusty brown. The work took hours. By the time she finished, her back was locked in a tight spasm, and her fingers were stiff, cramped claws. But her skirt now hung with an unnatural heavy drape, hiding her independence in plain sight. Her valise was essentially empty. If someone robbed her room, they would find nothing but an extra woolen blouse and a pair of damp stockings. Hunger clawed at her stomach, a sharp, hollow ache that made her lightheaded. 3 days on a single heel of hardtack and a shared pump of questionable water was taking its toll. She needed an income. The silver sewn into her hem was an emergency fund, a ticket onto a ship if Thomas's men ever tracked her this far west. It was not for daily bread. Nora stood, ignoring the sharp protest of her knees. She pulled on her heavy shawl and unlocked the door. The stairs smelled of boiled cabbage and unwashed bodies. She stepped out into Cutter's Alley. The sky was the color of a bruised plum, raining a fine, irritating mist that coated her eyelashes instantly. She didn't walk toward the merchant quarter. She walked down toward the violent, churning sounds of the harbor. The docks were a terrifying maze of heavy cargo nets, swinging wooden cranes, and shouting foremen. The stench of rotting kelp and raw sewage was so thick it coated the back of her throat. Nora kept her head down, her jagged hair hidden beneath her shawl, her heavy skirt dragging in the slime of the cobblestones. She found a massive, open-air shed where a dozen women were huddled over mountains of heavy canvas. Sail menders. Their hands were wrapped in thick leather palm guards, driving massive iron needles through the stiff, salt-crusted fabric. They looked exhausted, their faces lined with deep, permanent dirt. Nora walked up to the foreman, a squat, balding man with a ledger tucked under his arm. He smelled of cheap gin and stale tobacco.
"I need work," Nora said. Her voice was flat, carrying the gravelly exhaustion of the boarding house. He didn't look up from his ledger. "Hands." Nora held out her hands. They were scraped, bruised, the fingernails packed with mud, a crude bloody bandage wrapping her palm. They were ruined. The foreman finally glanced down. He snorted. "Four coppers a day. You bleed on the canvas, I dock your pay. Grab a palm guard from the barrel."
Nora walked to the barrel. She strapped the stiff, foul-smelling leather over her hand. She took an empty seat on a wooden crate next to a woman missing half her teeth, pulling a massive section of wet, impossibly heavy canvas onto her lap. The fabric was cold and rough as sandpaper. She drove the needle in. Her blistered heel throbbed. Her back ached. The wind howling off the gray ocean cut right through her damp wool. It was a miserable, back-breaking existence. But as she pulled the heavy wax thread tight, anchoring the canvas, a profound silence settled over her mind. There was no silverware clinking, no lavender scent, no suffocating velvet drapes, just the salt, the cold, and the glorious bruising weight of a life she had chosen.
Did Nora make the ultimate sacrifice, or did she simply wake up from a gilded nightmare? Trading a duchess's crown for a sail mender's needle is a brutal path, but sometimes the heaviest weight we carry is the life we never chose. What would you have done if you were in her muddy, ruined boots? Drop your thoughts, theories, and outrage in the comments below. If you felt the bitter salt wind of Highbridge and the fierce thrill of her survival, hit the like button and share this story.
Subscribe and ring the bell to support more raw, gritty tales of rebellion.